This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that sin. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
And my name is Souther Teague.
Hey, buddy.
How you doing?
Doing pretty good, man. How about you?
I'm really well. Happy to see you.
Yeah, man. Likewise.
Yeah, man.
We got a full studio today. We got a bunch of books on the table. We got a bag full of booze.
It's a bag of martinis.
Man.
A bag of flasks of martinis on ice.
Just had some pizza.
Yeah, man. Dude, sunny day.
Living it up.
This is life in Brooklyn.
You don't have to work on your book anymore?
Done. I know I've been saying that it was close. Well, last Wednesday, turned in the last of copy. Actually, while I was on the show, Jeff, my editor, texted me last Wednesday to say I needed to turn in another 250 words about something. Due to the layout, they had to change something, so it was a big hole. And then I did that on the train on the way to work, and he said, okay, this is pretty much it.
If on your phone.
If you don't, yeah, on the phone.
Of course.
The whole thing. He goes, if you don't hear from me tomorrow, which was last Thursday, then it's off to the printer. There's nothing we can do now. Phil Duff told me, you never finish a book, you just abandon it.
Yeah.
So I finally abandoned my book.
So you just on the fly, like on the train. See, this one, you know what, why do we give authors such high praise? I mean,
yeah, right. I just winged it. That was just pot shooting.
The whole thing on your iPhone, amazing.
Yeah. I wrote about the whole book was written on my iPhone, but it seems
like the kind of thing that Apple would like send you a laptop for your next book.
Or the new phone. I'll take the new phone.
Yeah, no. But then
I'm on the iPhone 7.
Yeah.
Send me the new fancy 10.
Yeah.
The one that you can open with your face.
Yeah, you could just like kind of like talk at it and it'll just dictate.
I tried to do some of that with mine towards the end, but your phone doesn't do dictation really well till you do it a lot.
Yeah.
It doesn't learn your patterns and your speech and all that stuff. So I never got into it far enough to make it easy. It was easier to just type.
Well, knowing you, it would take a lot longer than the normal person for your phone to catch up with you.
Honestly, I would pause every now and then if I couldn't spell a word, and I would just say the word, and so the Siri or whatever would spell it right for me.
That's amazing.
That's the most I ever used it for.
Well,
what have you been up to this week,
dude? It's been crazy. This was like a wild, wild weekend.
Yeah,
it was a hard weekend. Cinco de Mayo, Kentucky Derby,
your anniversary, but you didn't really celebrate your anniversary, right? You're making it a special day for that.
I celebrated my parents' 40th anniversary.
Holy smoke!
Which was Saturday as well, and then it was also Grand Army's 3-year anniversary. But we're having that party on Monday, this coming Monday at Grand Army.
Martini Monday birthday party.
It's going to be everything.
I'm off work and I don't have a book in my way. I'll be there.
All right, cool.
Like this, I kind of went nuts this week.
Yeah.
The book out of the way, I've been like, oh my God, I can go do stuff.
Yeah, and go, then you
I
were
went
judging
to a fancy dinner as a congratulations to myself.
Oh, yeah, nice. Where'd you go?
Le Cucu.
Ah,
real fancy.
Very nice. Did you have a good time on Monday at the Clarin?
That was a blast, and you were there in the audience, rooting on your boy Kevin, who did really well. He won Bartender Choice, he won Public Choice, he just didn't win the fucking competition, which has got to be a total letdown for him.
Hey man, not bad for your first competition.
Exactly. He crushed it, man. He made my favorite drink of the day, in fact. I was one of the judges. We were supposed to rate things on a 1 to 5 scale, and I wrote 6 and circled to 6. I was like, this is the best drink of the day. Best in show, I wrote.
Nice. But then our good friend of the show, Sarah Morrissey from Frenchette, won.
Sarah Morrissey took the prize.
Yeah, so she's going to be going to Haiti and hanging out, drinking enough Clarin until she doesn't like it anymore.
Yeah, probably. Out in the middle of nowhere, very rural. You got to go through, you know, miles and miles of rocky roads to get there.
Yeah.
So I did that. I went to Le Cucu. I went out with my buddy Todd last night and probably drank too much. We went to a bunch of places. We went to Rockarola. I know you like that place.
Yeah.
Drank out of the big schooners. Reminded me of being in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
Then we hit Extra Fancy, then Walter Foods.
Oh, so you just did the whole Williamsburg
thing. I was
trying
to hang out in Williamsburg for once. Man. I never get to get over there anymore. And I never get to see him. He's my best friend. Anyhow.
Well, actually, speaking of your book.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see it.
Like, we booked this a long time ago, but what's the timing?
Yeah, so it's awesome that our guest today actually is the photographer for your book, I'm Just Here for the Drinks.
Eric Metzger.
Eric Metzger, welcome to the show.
Studio, buddy.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Happy to see you again and again and again and again. We've become fast friends since October, I guess, was our first photo session, right?
Yeah, I think it was. We spent, about 8 days, 9 days all together on the book?
Sure, yeah. Long-ass days of just making drinks and pouring most of them down the drain, which is it's harsh. That's a harsh reality of cocktail photography.
Yeah, you just can't drink all the shoots that you do.
We would sort of start maybe taking nips of the ones later in the day when we know we were done.
Yeah, 1 o'clock rolls around.
But the early part, it was like, okay, well, this is just a beautiful drink of garbage that's going down the sink.
Well, okay, so
but you have this weird like reservation about it, by the way. By the end, and I've noticed you even post some on your Instagram. By the end of a long shoot, you have all these drinks sitting there just dying.
Yeah,
because you're like, I don't really want to just throw it away.
Sure, the great.
So it just sits there for a long time. And then you're like, okay, now I have to throw it away.
And then all your glassware is dirty.
All the glassware is dirty all at once, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that brings up an interesting question. I know that I've done a lot of my own styling for a bunch of different shoots. And a lot of times you absolutely, if you're trying to nail it, like if it's something with like Campari in it, you kind of have to use Campari unless you want to use like Crimson Dye E120 or whatever the hell.
Weirdly, it's harder, I think, to fake it than to just make it.
Yeah. Well, sometimes though, I mean, especially if it's on, I mean, if it's in like a tiki mug or like a mule mug or something like that that's opaque, I mean, you don't even have to put liquid in there. You just like fill it up with crushed ice and garnish the shit out of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Make sure that the ceramic or the metal's frosty and then you're done. I mean, sorry, I'm not trying to take any of the mystery out of the...
We didn't do any real styling on the book. We made real drinks.
Right.
There's one particular thing I can think of that we fucked with, and that was the hot drink. Remember?
Oh, that buffalo.
Because we couldn't
blue buffalo.
The blue blazer. No, because we couldn't get it hot enough in the little teacup that it was in to have enough steam coming up behind it.
Oh, sure.
So it was sitting towards the edge of the bar, so I just built a little platform behind it and put a pot of boiling water. So it's just steam coming up from behind it, but it looks beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, there's some things that you can fake along the way. You certainly shouldn't use water in terms of if you're using a clear alcohol like gin or whatever, then use, even if it's a cheaper version, use real alcohol because you can tell the difference. But you can kind of things a little bit.
What would you say the difference between using like water and a very clear, like if you're doing a bone dry martini in a shoot and you want it to just be like the crispest, most clear?
Well, a big thing is you got to shake that stuff. So if you're just taking warm spirit, if it's supposed to be a martini and you're throwing that into a glass, you have to shake real vermouth and gin or clear spirit together in order to get that nice frost. You want some condensation on the lip of the glass. And if it's just and what happens when light passes through some of that cocktail glass, you want it to have that viscosity. You want it to not just be clear and seeing the background behind it.
Right.
Biggest thing about this stuff is like you want the drinks to look delicious. And if it just looks warm, nobody wants to drink a warm martini.
You know what? I think from my perspective on shooting things like martinis, it's always it's hard to tell like who can tell the difference, like how sharp their eye is. You know, like because with you can have a totally frozen martini glass.
Sure.
Shake the shit out of some water. Just to get like a little bit of like viscosity in there. Obviously, you don't want it to be too cloudy or anything like that. But, you know, a lot of times whenever you add a little bit of, depending on the gin, and even sometimes vodka, once you add a little bit of dilution to it, it kind of turns blue. It has like a slight louche effect. So it breaks down the oil. So that is one thing that I always look at when I see a martini shot in a book. I'm like, that's just water in a glass.
I have to defer to the professional.
Sugar is also a really good thing.
I think me being colorblind, we've talked about this before, takes away from my, I don't know, concern over aesthetic. So I just always defer to the professional, whoever the professional is in the room. And Eric was the guy that did my book, so I never said anything about any drink, frankly. You took all the pictures, and I was like, yes, okay, good.
It was a good collaboration.
I don't know if our other guy's tougher. You did Brian Bartle's book, the Bloody Mary book, which you brought us a copy of, which is awesome. Thank you. And it's gorgeous. Did he say, like, no, that Bloody Mary looks like shit?
Brian Bartle's
do a different Bloody Mary for that one.
He might be the sweetest man in the industry. So Most of these things with collaborating with bartenders is like we stick in our lanes a lot of times, and that's what makes really good collaborations. I do the visuals and you guys make the drinks, and then we collaborate on the final result of like where the garnish goes, what the backgrounds are, all that stuff.
That's another thing I love about what you do. You and the people who do what you do, I'm sure it's got to be similar, but like you just take the fucking drink wherever you wanted. You'd go sit it on the corner of the floor somewhere, and then when you took the picture, there'd be this cool background that I would have never thought of.
Brian has a really good picture of me laying down on the floor of Joseph Leonard, shooting straight up at the tin ceiling, just as a background plate in the book. And it's like those little things, you know, when you go into places like Amor, and we shot also at Cienfuegos and some and other places in the East Village, they have so
we
many.
We shot everywhere, except for, you know, the one omission that I thought of later? We used their glassware, but we never shot a single photo inside Death & Co.
No.
Should have shot at least one in there.
We got their glassware.
We used their glassware, yeah.
We brought it back, I swear.
Most of it.
Well, something I'm looking forward to seeing, speaking of like backgrounds, obviously we spend a lot of time when we're designing bars and restaurants coming up with different textures and patterns and trying to put together a whole cohesive imagery whenever you're in there. One of the things that's really iconic, and I was talking with your buddy Max Green, mm-hmm. You know, he's a is it his bar open or is it close to?
We have very so again on Thursday when the book was done, Max and I were in the new space. It's called Blue Quarter, and we honestly the conversation went like this: like, okay, it's all clean. We've got all the product on the back bar. I said, theoretically, we could open tonight. And he was like, should I open tonight? So we did. We opened Thursday, Friday, Saturday of last week without saying a word to anyone. No Instagram, no nothing. We did some moderate sales, given that no one knew we were there. And then we're opening in earnest next week. This week we're kind of doing a little softy. Cool. Next week we'll do friends and family, press, and all that stuff.
So anyway, one of the things that he said that I thought was really cool is that he was showing me pictures of it, and I was like, man, that the bar top is really cool. You got this really cool, like tiled, like textured bar top. And he was like, yeah, man. He's like, after Mori Morgo, he was like, I realized that you got to make your bar top stand out from other bar tops. And, you know, that's one of the things. Like, if you see a picture of a cocktail in a Mori Morgo, you know exactly where it is. Sure. Even if it's somebody else shooting, like borrowing the bar to shoot in, you're like, oh, shit. Why did they shoot this in a Mori Morgo?
Yeah.
Because it's clearly not anywhere else.
Yeah, it makes a difference. And so, we were very conscious of that with the new space.
Yeah.
And it'll also be a great space. We've already talked to Eric. We're going to get you over there to take some photos for us, like you do for other places.
For sure.
And use that for our social media, because you got a better eye than we do. But we Max especially, spent a really good time making that place beautiful. You got to come check it out.
But sorry to kind of go off on that, but... You brought up the ceiling. And I mean, like when you're talking about this book, the Bloody Mary book, it's like another thing, obviously, that you have to deal with is, you know, let's say like Robert Simonson's book, the old fashioned book. Man, you got one drink that looks the same no matter how you make it.
Kind of,
you know?
So right?
You got to get really creative with glassware and ice and all the other like surrounding parts of it. And that's exactly what's up with this book, the Bloody Mary. It's a freaking Bloody Mary.
Right.
But
the interesting thing about the Bloody Mary.
There are a lot of different visual takes on this one, and a lot of background, a lot of different garnishes. I mean, I can't remember if there's anyone like in there like garnished with like a whole like slider and a slice of pizza and a corn dog swizzle stick or whatever.
That drives me mad.
But
for the most part, I think they avoided that. Yeah. But there are like orange Bloody Marys. There's a green Bloody Mary. There's a clear one that you make a gazpacho or like a clear tomato broth from. And so the Bloody Mary being so versatile, we didn't have as hard to make things look fresh each time as opposed to like an old fashioned for sure, which is like rocks glass, ice, you know, brown liquid for the most part.
Yeah.
So we got to play a little bit more, which was good.
It's good.
Yeah, you got at least you got some kind of color palette going on.
Yeah. The hard thing.
Like I saw one in there that's beets. I'm assuming that one's pretty purple.
Yeah.
Versus red, versus orange, versus yellow.
Yeah. There's a corn based one, which is yellow. Carrot one. But the tough thing a little bit about the Bloody Mary is that liquid isn't as translucent, and so light doesn't pass through it as well as say an old fashioned or a Negroni, where you have that like beautiful red or that beautiful brown, and you can really like you could throw light through it. The light has to wrap around the glass a little bit more,
right,
in order to get that full red. If you try to throw a lot of light through it, you're going to get a lot of red, but the background and everything else is going to go away.
Right.
So that's a fun challenge to work out.
Very cool.
How did you get into...
I was going to say, yeah. Now, like, before you got into books, I mean, like, we've definitely... I know that you've shot me, you've shot Souther, a bunch of other buddies, like, before, like, for different magazines and stuff like that. But it seems like such a specific kind of industry of photography for food and bev, like, these days. And it's not something that was necessarily... The cool thing is, like, when you see, like, your photography or someone like Daniel Krieger or Shannon Sturgis, you know, there's, like, an artistic element to it that you didn't really see in cookbooks and cocktail books from, say, previous to, like,
right,
15 years
exactly.
ago.
Exactly. It used to be very pragmatic looking. Like, here's the recipe. This is your goal. Right. Yeah. And now it's like, here's the recipe. Here's your goal. But it's also...
has life in
beautifully
it.
Beautifully... Yeah. Life. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So, like,
how did you get into that angle of photography?
Well, I went to school for photography at SVA. And then during that time, I was also a terrible bartender for a brief period of time.
We're all a terrible bartender for a brief period of time.
there was no hope for me. I wasn't going to get any better. I remember spilling beers on people and pouring full martinis on the bar.
I did both of those last night at my bar.
Nice.
Both.
Was I bartending?
Nope. I was straight up me.
Okay. So there was an interest in that world. And I certainly come from kind of an Epicurean background. My parents are, you know, they enjoy a well-cooked meal. They imbibe regularly. And so I grew up with all that around, drinking, you know, a little glass of wine young. But I went to school for photography and thought I would be a portrait photographer because I worked with a lot of portrait photographers. And I assisted for about 9 years, which was a great time.
That's a long time to assist.
Wow.
Before you can take it off on your own. But,
yeah, right.
But you get to, yeah, I mean, like, you get to learn a lot in that. I always think that way about, like tattoo artists. It's like,
sure,
how long is, like, what's the time frame before you kind of, like, you're like, all right, now I'm
set out in charge.
Before you get the stick number.
I had really amazing mentors, and just to name a few, like Ethan Hill, Brian Fink, Vince Musi. These were people that were incredibly encouraging, and that 9-year apprenticeship was probably as valuable or more valuable than SVA, the time spent at SVA. And we traveled all around. We, like I was saying to you, Damon, we went to, we got embedded with the U.S. Marshals. We went to Walter Reed Hospital a number of times during the latter part or during the Iraq and Afghanistan war. With Vince Musi, we used to go and photograph exotic pets, so skunks and deer and tigers and bears. And it would be this crazy, weird, fun experience with... under the tutelage of people that were just so good and so encouraging.
He was saying earlier before the show, he was telling me a little bit about the running around with the U.S. Marshals. Like,
this was what Brian Fink.
He had to wear a bulletproof vest with a tag on it that said "Press."
Vegas is no joke.
It's no amazing.
Joke. So I think that part of it was
shoot first, ask questions later. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right.
It was like a combination of being prepared and incredible luck. I thought I was going to do portrait photography.
The title of my next book.
And I was with these people that were incredibly encouraging. And then along comes Wiley Dufresne. And I'd been breaking out a little bit and getting some editorial work and some advertising work. Met him, and at the 11th hour during November of 2014, he had to make this book before WD-50 closed. And so they were on this wave, and it was had an end date. It was going to go away. And so they just kind of whisked me away into their 11-year history. And it was like, just capture this. Come along with us. And that was a dream. I mean, that's rarely an opportunity that comes up, particularly for We shot, I think, 20 days altogether in November of that year.
Wow.
And
it's grueling. Like, maybe the listener doesn't understand. To shoot for a day is to get there very fucking early and to be there pretty fucking late.
Yeah.
And to not stop really for lunch or anything.
Yeah. And they were working 2 times harder than I was.
They were actually in service as well.
They were in service. They were making recipes over the course of this archive of 11 years. And then,
all his recipes are pretty straightforward, though. So
yeah, exactly. There's not a whole lot to them. it was very emotional for a lot of people, and this was a thing that really mattered to a lot of people, and they had given me that trust to document it, yeah. And also the creative liberty to run around and make the kind of pictures that I wanted to make. And that's a very rare, and it's great because a project like that, you come out with long-lasting friendships, sure, and relationships. And so,
well, you've gone through the shit together.
Right.
Yeah, right. I
mean, you're in the trenches.
You might as well have worked on the line with those dudes.
Right. You're battery mates now.
And at the end of it, like closing night, we were there until 3 a.m., 4 a.m. with the sous chefs and young chefs down in the basement, cooking up egg sandwiches, photographing that,
yeah, easy stuff. Egg sandwich.
it was a dream.
That your big first kind of break into this arena?
I think so.
How did you get tapped by Wiley? Actually, we should take a break and come back. But how did you get tapped by Wiley Dufresne to be a part of W? Very iconic. This book is going to be iconic. Hold that thought. We'll come back after the break. Sure. Also, while we're away on the break, we're going to crack into these martinis that you brought us. And I appreciate the buildup of telling us what a terrible bartender you are. and then you brought us bottled martinis. So we're going to crack open a martini.
Time's changed. Back
with Eric Metzger right after the break. Stay with us.
Super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
And we're back. You're listening to The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. And we have our buddy, Mr. Metzger, in here. We're talking about some really fun stuff about how he got into the food and beverage photography. And had some recent projects. We're talking about the Wiley Dufresne book, and I believe Souther had a question that started with, how the fuck?
Mm.
Yeah, so I asked myself that question.
So, you know what I mean? It's not like you were just asked by, you know, local restaurant does good and writes a book and you got to be the photographer. You were asked by a culinary legend, an icon in New York City.
He was a Simpsons character on one episode.
Exactly. Yeah. You were tapped by a Simpsons character. Like that's big. Like he's blended himself enough into the cultural view that he's transcended what he is and was at W50, sure, right? Which was a pretty avant-garde, forward-thinking, molecular gastronomy style restaurant. To be enough of a household name to be a Simpsons character.
Sure.
So how did he tap you as your first? Like, I would get it if you already had a couple in your...
There was a little bit of build up. I mean, it wasn't just like I ate at the restaurant and he came over and was like, hey, you got a camera. there was a slow build happening, nothing on that level for sure. But I think to Wiley's credit, Wiley has always taken risks on people. and whoever has come into his kitchens has worked incredibly hard and gone on to do amazing things. So my story with Wiley was I was there on an editorial job, and I was there to do a portrait of him and photograph shrimp grits. He was in need of a photograph that didn't have to do with the editorial thing that I was working on. And he was like, I need this thing shot. And I was like, I can shoot it for you. And then time went by. And this contract for this book had been up for him for a long time. And with the restaurant closing, they had to get it done quickly at the end of it to celebrate the 11 years. And, you know, other than that, Peter just called me after
Peter Meehan,
yeah. And I think part of it was we got on really well. We had really good rapport during the that editorial shoot. And I think that he also really appreciated somebody helping him out and not in a time that he needed something done and didn't rake him over the coals. You know, sure. Like we just had that kind of good rapport, handshake deal. I'll see you later. And then I came in and did a little bit of website stuff. And then whatever it was, like 3 or 4 months later, this opportunity kind of fell into my lap. And it really was, you know, having that history of being with some of those photographers and then the luck of the moment.
Sure.
Well, I think also it has something to do with just being, I think, you know, a lot of this has to do with hospitality and just being sure. A genuinely good person and being able to say yes and like, yeah, hell yeah, I'll help you out with this.
Yeah.
I mean...
Sure, and I'm certain that Wiley's the type of guy who could spot that.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. I mean, like, just like Peter Meehan, who co-wrote the book with Wiley Dufresne, he also did the Frankie's Cookbook. He's done all the stuff with David Chang, you know, and like, they just became buddies because they like talking shit to each other and just about everyone else. And like... And then they're buddies and they started to make all this other stuff happen.
And what nicer people to like... fall like for that to fall into your lap. Right. I mean,
yeah, totally.
How does it feel to have to, because as a photographer, surely your portfolio is what sells your next job, right?
Sure.
So you did this book 4 years ago and it just came out. and you're sitting there waiting the whole time, right?
That was a hard thing. It lived on the archive. You know, it just, it would sit there and then I would tinker with it. I'd go through and I'd edit it. And then I tinker with it.
You're never done. Yeah, you never exactly. finished. You just abandoned.
While he was closing down WD, and then he was opening up dues, and so it just kind of had this arc. But yeah, I mean, it was amazing after that time to finally see it come to fruition, and also like, it's a pretty visual book as well.
And it's enjoying a lot of success, right? People are buying it, and it was up for an IACP award that it didn't win, right?
No, it did not win.
Yeah, it's nice to be nominated.
Yeah, it's nice to be nominated. Always a bridesmaid.
That's right. So I think you had two in this last round, right?
Yeah, with Bartles as well, which was fun to celebrate with them.
Yeah, of course.
Cool.
Winners are losers.
It's amazing.
I want to know about this, since you obviously are like a freelance artist. So yes. Like you have to go out there and like make all this stuff happen on your own. I mean, it helps when you start getting into like some of these books and you kind of start snowballing into different jobs. I mean, like I know that recently you just moved to a new studio, correct?
Yes. Yeah, that's kind of the new heavy lifting. And it feels like the culmination of 10 years of hard work. So I was operating out of the apartment for a long time, and then all of a sudden it felt like I need to expand. I need to figure out how to get a space and push a little bit more growth. And so we got a studio in Gowanus on 6th and 3rd, and it feels great. I just moved into the space earlier last month, and it's about 750 square feet. I'm getting surfaces and all that stuff, glassware. We've been shooting in there about four times last month, and
cool.
building it up.
Yeah, man. It's always a.
Sometimes you need to make that leap. You know, like you're sitting at your apartment doing it on your computer, and you're like, if I had more space, I'd have more work.
Yeah,
if I had more work, I'd have more space.
The big thing with being freelance, you can't be risk averse.
Right.
Totally. Well,
already taking the risk to be freelance. Exactly. May as well risk it. You know, go.
Yeah. And it's all I've ever known. 12 years of freelance. I've never had a job. The last real job I had was being a shitty bartender.
Which, by the way, this is a fine martini. Actually,
thank you.
50-50 with dilution right there in the flask.
I learned from you. 50-50 in the glass.
Yeah. Mm. Well, okay, so. And also, I can tell
with that lemon twist.
I can tell that there's booze in that.
Oh, yeah.
The light's hitting at the right way.
Yeah, exactly.
But going back to that, it's like, taking that leap of faith and like really like jumping into it. It's hard, man. For like a lot of people, we were actually talking about this before the show, like, you know, how the arc of the brand ambassador thing has changed and how, you know, a lot of times there's that, but then there's also like all these different like kind of like fringy parts of being in the bar or like food industry that you can kind of like turn into career, you know? And like I've known like some other people who used to be bartenders and chefs, and they just like photograph their own food, and then all of a sudden they started getting paid to do
that.
I
think that happens more and more now, especially with Instagram. And I kind of want to talk about that a little bit.
Sure.
Do you feel like there's some kind of are you in competition with Instagrammers? As a professional photographer of food and drink, when every single person takes a picture of everything they eat? These guys at the table right now are probably going to take a picture of this pizza that just came.
Yes and no.
I'm actually going to take a picture of their pizza.
I know, it does look pretty good. It's not binary, necessarily.
Well, sure, nothing is. But like, do you feel any kind of, I don't know if threat is the right word, but do you feel like, well, there's this jackass out there who's got a million followers, and I don't, and I'm a professional?
Sure. Audience certainly matters. Building an audience certainly matters, but just having a camera matters less. You guys work in hospitality, and a lot of that is bedside manner, right? Like tableside manner. And a big thing about being...
I think I know what you're about to say, but like I think a lot of it is outside of like bedside manner. It's like there's a lot of stuff that in hospitality that guests don't see. You know, there's a ton of like tiny,
there's lots
like,
little, of behind the curtain.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of stuff that's happening right in front of your face, and you would never even know. Like,
smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, it's not really that. It's like the way someone comes over, like whenever you've gone to the bathroom, and a waiter comes by and they refold your napkin for you and put there very nicely. And then you come back and you're just like, a lot of people might not even notice that. You know,
But they
then
just think I threw it down and it landed that way.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm magical.
Yeah, right.
It is.
But then on the other side, yours is like,
or like, you know, very visual, the simple stuff that you're talking about, like the marking and things like that. You know, like you may not be aware that your server is putting down things on the table because of the thing that's coming next. You know,
right.
I just had a pretty fancy dinner as a celebration. I went to Le Cucu and I noticed that we didn't order any fish, but then we were marked with a fish knife. And I was like, they're bringing us something. Right. And Natalie was like, what do you mean? And I'm like, this is a fish knife. We didn't order any fish. And then boom, here comes a fish course.
Right.
And like, the chef sent this out to you because, well, whatever.
Yeah.
Mostly to her, I think, because she's famous, not me.
But it is all those little things. And if you can, and it's working relationships as well, right? It's like relying on that network and going the extra distance for those clients that you have. And that goes a long way. And yes, Instagram is super important. I mean, I put stuff up and I'm very, I try to be engaged with it, but I also don't, I care a lot more about my day to day working with the clients that I have and building on that rather than building a huge amount of followers in the expanse of
just being a hype machine.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, that's just classic respectability, you know, like responsibility.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You know, I don't know what my deal is with the social media. I'm not a good photographer. That's a for sure. Like, honest, that's for sure. You know, maybe if I had that iPhone 10, iPhone people. Doesn't your brother work for them? Get him, get me one.
I'm like, dude.
Can
I
you?
I thought they were under our seats. I thought this was like going to the O show.
That's right. You're right. You don't even have one.
I haven't had a laptop in years, Dylan.
Yeah, hilarious. Yeah, I don't know how it is I engage and somehow do it so well. Like, I have a lot of followers. When I look around at other people, I'm like, wow, how am I, why am I so, what do people care what I'm doing?
Well, I think part of that especially is the photos. Your like personality,
Twitter,
right?
Twitter I get, like, it's words. Sure. But the photos on Instagram, my photos are not good. Like, that's why I'm hiring you to do some soon.
Totally. And that's part of Instagram as well. It's like not necessarily being the best photographer,
it's like
but
also
but having something to say, just being able to have interesting content that maybe isn't just aesthetic content.
Yeah.
Most of what I do is mostly driven by aesthetics. I think most of what you do is narrative based.
Exactly. Yeah. People want to hear what I have to say about any particular Amaro or Bitters or whatever. And
they just want to hear you fly off the handle.
They do want to hear that. I think a lot of people come to the bar and press my buttons on purpose because they know that I'll go at them.
I certainly do.
Yeah. They know that they'll wind me up enough and I'll go at them.
Right.
I want to ask a question about that. Based on when you're working on a project, say like a magazine article or a book versus doing like branded work, because there's a clear difference between like what a spirit company might want from you for any kind of social media or like their website. How do you approach that like in the different ways? I mean, obviously you've got like, you're working with say like Souther on a book and you know, he's a very impassioned person about what he's trying to convey with his book. But then, like, whenever you go with a brand, it's like a lot of brands will, and I'm not saying this is every brand, but like a lot of them are just looking to sell more product, right?
Sure.
So
there's a spectrum, and that spectrum goes from personal project, and then that spectrum goes all the way over to advertising, corporate execution of their project. And they're very different because when you're on the one side, it's creative, but it's technical, and you're executing. When you're on the corporate side or the product side, you're executing somebody else's vision.
I was a graphic designer for years. That's what I went to school for.
Yeah.
I got out of it because I didn't like that end of the spectrum.
And I look at that as being technical challenges.
Sure.
And that's fun because you can't always live in the world of personal projects. I mean, you could,
but it takes a lot longer to get. Yeah,
but and so the books and editorial stuff, which are fewer and far between than the advertising work and even the personal work, because there's limited time in each day. But the editorial is kind of that meeting in between, because you're hired for your perspective and your aesthetic. And you get to be creative in, and it almost feels like personal work. So like the Bloody Mary book, the Wiley Dufresne, our book together, it feels like personal work.
So you become more invested in it.
Exactly.
It's like it takes that into the speak. Yeah, totally. I get that. Absolutely.
But I also get the other side too, which is like, I used to cook at a Waffle House, my first cooking job. And man, you really learn that everybody wants their eggs very particular.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right? So you're having to deal with everybody wanting their thing very particular.
Totally. And that's a good...
Except for guys like me who are just like, yeah, as long as it's good, it's good.
Right.
You know better than me. I'm that type of guy who always says, like, leave it to the expert. Like,
sure.
If I go to the tire shop, the tire guy tells me what tires I need. I don't fucking know that shit. He does. Right? Like,
leave big it to... Big-ass tires.
Big-ass fat tires is what I need.
The cool thing about...
But you know what I mean? Like, there's... I tell them what it is I'm going to do.
Sure.
And they tell me what it is that I need. Right? Right? I'm going to go touring. I'm going to ride a lot. Okay, you need this tire. I'm just going to be bumping around the city. Okay, you need this tire. Like, I just tell them what I need. And I let them do it, which is what we did with you.
For
sure. Like, Jeff chose you. I don't know where or how he chose you, my editor, Jeff. And by the way, I pitched him some names, and yours wasn't one because I didn't know you.
Right.
And he's like, where are we going with this guy? And I was like, okay. Like, I don't know photography. He knows photography. You know photography. He knows editorial. You know, like, that's not my part of it.
Right.
But I imagine that I'm maybe one of the looser guys.
And it's also a testament
that you have
like,
to deal with.
It's knowing where to control and where to let go, right? It's like in your bar at Amore, you can control everything that happens in that space, right? Like, you can, you know the portions, you know how to run the house, all that stuff. And this was an area that Jeff knows more about. and there's a trust. And so it's like, give up that control to somebody that you trust. And so,
I mean, he's made all these beautiful John Wayne books.
Who doesn't?
Did you know that? Most of their books are about John Wayne.
Really?
It's weird.
Don't they have a cannabis magazine too?
They have a magazine about weed.
Oh, that makes sense.
But they make their money on John Wayne books.
Well, there's a lot of people who are.
There's a lot of people who really like John Wayne.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And those people actually buy books.
They do. They're exactly.
Age demographic that doesn't like
bingo.
Download them, you know.
Yeah, no. They get phone copies. Calls. They get actual landline phone calls all the time of people saying, "Where can I get?" Cuz they also do John Wayne magazines all the time. So they'll be like, "Where can I get a subscription to the magazine?" There's like, "You got to go online." They're like, "I don't have a computer." He's like, "Well, Jeff, the editor, will literally be on the phone with people who will somehow get his number and be like, "Do you have a friend who has a computer?"
That's
Yeah. No, just not
happening.
Let me just write down your information. I'll send you a magazine.
Amazing. I miss those days, actually, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I do too. That's why I'm such a Luddite.
Well, that's why books are good, right? Mm-hmm. That you get that physical thing at the end of the day.
I think we're lucky. We're going to be lucky, yeah. You and I, with this book, because it's already getting a lot of traction in pre-order. I'm not blowing my own horn here, but it's already... I told you this... There you go. Dave's blowing my horn. Did I tell you?
Whoa, family show.
Hey, easy. Did I tell you, Damon, that my book is currently the number one pre-selling book they've ever done over there at Topics Media Lab?
Yeah.
Sweet.
At last count, it was 70. Yeah. I'm like, that's not a big number. He's like, that's huge. Your book isn't out for 4 more months. There's a book that comes out next week that's only sold 11. I was like, okay, that's a big number, I guess. So I think we're going to enjoy some success because this is the type of book that people still buy. You want it's got plenty of information. It's definitely, I think my book is after the final copy and we looked at it all, I think it's going to be considered a reference book. So it's a book you're going to pull down when you want some information. It's also got some recipes in it. You're going to want to lay it open like a manual and have it on hand while you're making that thing. I think that a lot of books that are just copy and you know, information, you can have that on your Kindle. You don't really care.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So I think we're going to do pretty well.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Also, at the same time,
I don't think we're going to get any awards, but I think we're going to sell some books.
We'll see.
Yeah, I mean that's always it's always up in the air.
We'll have a good launch party.
Yeah, you'll have some parties.
I've been approached by a few people about where to do it and what to do. It's going to be fun.
Batch a couple more of these.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
At 70, you need for the people who come to the party. Yeah, I've already been approached by Hannah Lee. Mm-hmm. Wants to host the launch party at Porchlight.
Oh, sweet.
And then we would do a signing party on another date at Boilermaker with Greg Boehm.
Cool.
And he's going to sell it at Cocktail Kingdom. It's going to be rad.
Great.
Yeah, fantastic.
Damn, you sneaking out?
Yeah, well, that's cool, man. And what the date again is?
August 28th.
August 28th. Yeah. All right.
Pre-order now on Amazon.com.
That's great.
And watch my social media for a bonus round incentive piece.
And if we don't miss any shows, that's going to coincide with our 300th episode.
Well, yeah, your 300th episode. Certainly, I'm on the show, but you've done all 300. Well, not all, but very close.
Yeah.
Amazing. It's all coming together.
It's going to be a fun summer, guys.
It's going to be just like this crazy weekend of Cinco de Derby birthday anniversary.
Ugh. Cool, man.
It is going to be a fun summer. Hopefully, we're going to carry around some coolers like this full of ice and lemons and bottled martinis, which are delightful.
Martini lunch.
I'll post a photo of them on our new Instagram, which is Speakeasy Podcast Instagram. Check it out there. Also, I had this idea the other day. I was talking to somebody, and maybe we can come up with it together, but I don't know it. Maybe it exists already. Maybe someone could tweet at us or figure it out. There's plenty of words. It was while I was having this fancy dinner. There's plenty of words for people who like to eat a lot that are positive words. You're a gourmand, you're an epicure, you're all these things. There isn't a positive word for someone who likes to drink a lot. You're a drunk, you're an alcoholic, you're
a viper.
You're life of the party.
But is that a positive word?
I don't know.
Somebody throw us
bon
a positive
vivant.
I think that's more of a lifestyle. That's food and drink.
Libertine.
We said a libertine. All right, Dave, coming in with the dark horse. Coming up, so episodes that are coming up, we got Ann Peck Davis is coming on. She just wrote a new book. We got Angus Winchester. Really looking forward to having him on the show. He's going to talk about Bar Convent Brooklyn.
Yeah, coming
right
up.
The Bar Convent Berlin that's moving over here to Brooklyn. And I'm taking that day
that'll be the 13th of June is when it starts or whatever. And I'm taking that day to do a. I'm going to be bartending at Clover Club with Italicus and Giuseppe Gallo. Cool. It's going to be a lot of fun. We got Lauren Myerskoff coming up from New Orleans. She's with Cocktail and Sons. She's the head honcho over there, making all these cool syrups that you can purchase. Julie Reiner's agreed to be on the show. Will Elliott's coming up. We got a great summer planned out of quality content here at the Speakeasy Radio.
Sure do.
So tune in and listen to
Lots
us.
Lots of good stuff. We got Camp Run Amok coming up at the end of the month.
Sure. Are you going?
There. Yeah, I'll be down there.
Good Lord, man. Have you been before?
No.
Is that serious? No?
Yeah.
This is going to be your first time?
Yep.
What do they call you? A squirrel. You're a little squirrel camper.
I'm going to rent a hotel room down the street.
There is no down the street. Dude, it's in the middle of nowhere.
Maybe I'll bring that slow and low van.
Listen, I'm going to tell you, I did it in I think it was year two. I obviously wasn't in year one, but I think it was year two that I did it. And I still am buddies with my cabin mates. And it was, I don't want to say life-altering, but it was a huge thing. I loved it.
Cool. I love camping.
I don't think I would do it again because it was a lot. But I would never, I would never undo it. It was great. You're gonna have a blast.
Cool. Yeah.
Camp Run Amok.
Then Bar Convent. Then Tiki by the Sea. There's a lot going on over the next month.
Happening. Yeah, man. You gonna get any work done?
Nah, bro.
Well, thanks so much for Eric Metzger sitting in with us and talking to us. And then you're gonna pull out your camera and take a few snaps of us so we can have a decent portrait photo for the Speakeasy logo.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate that too.
Thank you for having me.
Oh man, it's been a blast. Jim sat in here quietly the whole time, but Jim's here from Hope and Olive up in Massachusetts. A great restaurant up there. You gotta go to, right?
Yes, thank you. Such a pleasure to be here with you all.
Oh yeah, man. Longtime listener. He just happens to be in town. Thought he'd come sit in on the radio. That's pretty fun. Yeah. I encourage any of you to reach out to us and do the same. We've always got some chairs here in the studio. That's all I've got. Take us out.
That's it for the Speakeasy this week. Check out Heritage Radio Network for many more programs like this one. Did I say proglams? Pro-glamorous.
Glams, that's right.
Programs like this. This martini got to me, bro. All right. That's it. Cheers, guys.
Thanks, everybody.
Salud.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues that send. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.